Hello and welcome to the Business of InfoSec podcast with me, Michelle Ribeiro. In this podcast, we chat to senior information and cybersecurity executives from a range of industries about their passions, experiences, and challenges. Without further ado, let's go ahead and dive into today's episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Business of InfoSec podcast. Today, we'll be talking about cyber insurance, and joining me is Rob Wiggin, who is the cybersecurity advisor from WTW. Hi, Rob. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm well, thanks, Michelle. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today. So Rob Wiggin has worked in technology since 1987. He took a sabbatical in 2002 and decided to specialize in security when he returned to the workplace. Back then, security was very technology and infrastructure focused, so he has seen some big changes. Rob had the opportunity of joining the IBM Managed Security Services business in 2007 and growing their MSS onboarding capability. This gave him some great exposure to some of the world's largest companies and networks. From there, he took on senior security roles in multiple organizations across banking, utilities, and higher education sectors. What a wealth of knowledge, Rob. On a personal note, Rob is very passionate about female AFL football. And if he's not at his work desk, he's usually found around the football club looking to create opportunities to help young players make the most of their talent and get the best out of their football journey. That's amazing, Rob. I'm curious to know, how did your passion for female AFL football start?
So I've always been a fan of football generally. But my daughter ended up playing from the time she was a teenager till she was in her late 20s at the club she was playing at. They were a bit short on volunteers at one stage, and so she said, "Dad, come down and help." I came down and helped, and 7 years later, I'm still helping, and she's retired. But you know, it's something that I just get so much enjoyment out of, and the progress in female football over that last 7 years I've been involved has just been amazing, with it becoming a national game now.
That's amazing. Congratulations to the whole family involved. And your family is also your biggest passion, and you are always looking for opportunities to travel to Melbourne and spend time with your three grandchildren. That's very lovely. How old are them?
So they're 4, 2, and one that's 3 months old now. So.
Oh, that's amazing. That's very lovely. Yeah. So let's get started and talk a little bit about what we came here to talk today. But before we jump straight into cyber insurance, I'd like to ask you a question, Rob. And I'm sure our listeners and all of our listeners who know you, they are interested in hearing your thoughts on the same question. Is there life after being a CISO?
And the answer to that is definitely. I think I found working in the CISO role really rewarding, but it's also really intense. You know, you, as much as you try and plan for the unexpected, there's always something new around the corner, and you've always got to respond quite quickly to things that you don't necessarily have 100% coverage of. So I'm actually really enjoying, you know, levering that knowledge that I've acquired in that pressure cooker environment. To help clients prioritize their security programs. And I think I connect well with them because I've walked in their shoes before.
So Rob, how did you see cyber insurance back then, and how do you see cyber insurance now?
Yeah, good question. So when I was in the CISO role, often the process around cyber insurance was that the person who handled insurance in the organization would come to me with a proposal form. Initially, you know, back in 2012, 2013, that was a one pager or two pager that you'd answer some high level questions and away the form would go, and apparently you'd get insurance. So the challenge in my mind was that I didn't really have visibility of the overall process. So I was given all these questions to answer, but I really didn't know what the outcome of that was, except that on the Risk and Audit Committee reports, it said we had cyber insurance. What that actually meant, it wasn't necessarily clear to me. So I know now, being on the other side of the fence, that there was probably some simple things that I should have been asking, like understanding the limits of the coverage, how we would onboard an incident response partner in the case of an incident. All those things would have been valuable to me to understand how we would respond to an incident rather than waiting for the incident to happen and then engaging the insurance folks.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And what are the biggest myths around cyber insurance that you think CISOs are currently believing?
Yeah, look, there's probably a number of them, and probably the ones I'm hearing the most is CISOs will say, oh, yeah, but I can buy another tool with that money that I spend on cyber insurance. Now, my response to that is, if you're going to go and buy another tool, then which problem are you trying to solve and who's going to operate that new control? So it's actually going to cost you a lot more by the time you actually take in the operation of the control. And the other point is the insurance piece generally doesn't come out of the technology budget. So you can actually go and buy the tools as long as they're in your capital budget. But insurance often comes out of the risk and insurance budget. The next one that we've seen a lot of recently was there was an insurance company that talked about cyber being uninsurable. And I think that was the view of one insurance company. We need to just continue to bear in mind that there are many carriers in the market and it's a competitive market. A lot of insurers are actually investing in cyber risk people to help with their underwriting process. So insurance companies still have to maintain their book and maintain their revenue. Next one is that cyber insurance doesn't pay out. And when you actually look at the numbers around claims, cyber insurance pays out a higher percentage of claims than many of the other insurance lines. There have been a couple of cases that have got attention around that have had to go to court cases, but what you generally find is that those organisations haven't had a cyber liability policy. They've had something like a property damage policy or maybe a cyber crime policy, which is more about the financial crime side of things. So again, you know, just organisations need to be very clear about what they want. The Lloyd's war exclusions have been a topic of conversation. So they put out some new law exclusions earlier this year or earlier in 2022. And what we find is that people sort of start to panic about that because of the Russia-Ukraine conflict. So they think if they get compromised by a Russian group, that will get excluded under the war exclusions. The most commonly used war exclusion requires that there's a concentrated attack against the country where the company is domiciled. So attribution to that level is quite difficult. There aren't that many cases where that war exclusion is going to apply unless there's that concentrated campaign that can be attributed. And the last one I hear a lot of, it was if insurance companies didn't pay ransoms, there'd be no ransomware. Now, that obviously assumes that everybody's got cyber insurance because it require the view requires that the only ransoms get paid are the ones that are covered by insurance, and we know that that's just not true.
Yeah, thank you so much. A lot of information. You've covered a lot of ground, and that is definitely some very interesting things for CISOs to consider based on the topics you just shared with us. Now, speaking from your experience as a previous CISO who understands the challenges of the role, why do you think CISOs should rethink their insurance strategy?
Look, I think the most important thing is that when you're in the throes of a high severity cyber incident, there's a lot of things that you have to think about, is like all the internal stakeholders you have to manage and so on. So if you have insurance, then the insurer will bring a lot of those third parties that will help you be in a position to quickly respond to those things. So people like you, your legal people will help you with your regulatory and compliance issues, your communications people, which as we've seen in the recent incidents last year, communications can be very easily messed up. And you know, while they think they start pretty well with them, it's a really difficult one to get right. And then just doing the incident response work and you know, understanding what's happened and what you have to do to remediate. And your insurance will also cover some of the business interruption cost and the increased costs of working while you're working all that stuff out. So there's certainly benefit in that regard.
And how can risk management and cyber insurance complement other cybersecurity solutions?
Yeah, so I think it's really important that people remember that insurance is a risk transfer mechanism. So So each organization is going to make their own determination what's right for them. So, you know, like any insurance transaction, you're expected to play your part. It's kind of like, you know, with your car insurance, if you left your car out on the street unlocked with the keys in the ignition, it'd be hard to convince an insurance company to pay out when it gets stolen. But, you know, that's why we have locks on our cars and we put cars in their garage and so on. So getting back to the cyber part of it, is that you have to have a certain, it's good to have a certain level of controls that will cover most risks, but there's still, we're in a rapidly changing threat landscape. So we need to, you know, there's a point where the two cross over, where you want to transfer that risk to an insurance company, or you think it's appropriate to risk transfer to your own self-insurance capability.
Yeah, right. And what are your suggestions and recommendations for organizations willing to take cyber insurance as part of their risk management approach?
Yeah, I think, as I just said, the sub-threat landscape is currently changing. So organizations have to look after their own backyard and they have to maintain common sense controls. And, you know, the insurers are really looking for those really general hygiene factors. To make sure organizations have an idea about their cyber risk and that they appear to be managing it. Second thing is cyber insurance it's a complex process. So, you know, my advice is to engage a broker to help you navigate that landscape, and preferably a broker that has those deep relationships with the cyber carriers. And just make sure you practice your response so you know where your gaps and weaknesses are.
Yeah, sure. And in terms of board management, board level, how can CISOs get buy-in from senior management when adopting cyber insurance?
Yeah, so the cyber insurance conversation has to still be about risk transfer. What organizations should probably be looking at is doing that detailed exposure and analysis and understanding the cost of an incident. That will really help you understand how much insurance you need to buy and what sort of coverage you need. And as I said before, just make sure you see you're presenting the insurance proposal as in terms of risk and risk transfer, because that's how your senior management views everything, really.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a very, very interesting discussion, Rob. We've covered a lot of important information in such a short period of time, but I just wanted to ask a final question to wrap up. What would you say is the biggest takeaway for our audience today based on what we spoke about?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, ultimately the CISO is accountable for managing cyber risk, and each organization has different tolerances for the risk. And so within that risk and risk tolerance view, every organization will decide how they want to transfer their risk. So the simple things are, have your basic hygiene factors in place, understand your exposures and manage them accordingly. Tread your own path is always a good one. And which sort of goes back to a lot of those things that people are saying about cyber insurance I talked about earlier. And I always live by the trust but verify. So, you know, if somebody says something that you think may or may not be true, go out and verify it somewhere. And hopefully we'll get away from some of the myth and legend around these things.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Rob. It's been a great discussion. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
We hope you have enjoyed the Business of InfoSec podcast. Be sure to subscribe from whatever you're currently listening. Plus, if you're listening from Apple Podcasts, please consider leaving us a review. As always, you can find us and engage with us on social media, as well as on the Business of InfoSec website, where you can find this podcast, as well as other topical articles, reports, and videos. So, until next time, take care.